So, I guess you guess I'm from Australia. And I really needed a bit of help after the session that we just had. It's a hell of an act to follow, such great science to see. And my thanks go to Bruce and Yul for inviting me over to talk with you. And you're truly a brave crowd that come to the last session on standards. That's a measure of dedication, I think. I'm going to talk about the Australian National eHealth Program, tell you a bit about pathology in Australia, because I'm going to use pathology as the example of what's going on, and then tell you about some projects that may be of interest to you. And by starting with, since we're talking about standards, we better go to the International Standards Organisation. This is what they say you need for communication, both semantic and syntactic rules, which means structure and meaning. And for that to occur, it seems straightforward enough to just say, OK, we agree on a grammar and we agree on the words. But for systems to talk to one another, it's much more rigorous than that, especially when privacy of those for whom the information matters is important. So you need business-level rules for that. You also have to have a language which is agreed, and one of the great joys of healthcare, I'm sure you would agree, is the richness of the language. And for computers to understand that richness, you need a terminology. And then you have to also deal with things actually connecting to one another. And whilst you may think that we've got that well standardised now, there are many ways of connecting with one another, and not all of them cross over. So there are still ways for that technical level to fall over, as I'm sure many of you have found on occasions. So the nine most terrifying words in the English language are... and that's what we've got at the moment. We have a thing called the National eHealth Transition Authority. And if you were at HIMSS recently, were some of you at HIMSS? No. Two. Well, the Chief Executive Officer of our National eHealth Transition Authority actually gave a talk there, and I'm going to use some of his slides talking about the initiative that NITA is undertaking at the moment. Ian Reinecke was the CEO for the Sydney 2000 Games, Olympic Games. And so he came with some credentials, although he had no exposure to health at all, and it's been an interesting time for us all. At any rate, we certainly wish NITA well, and I've done some work with them, and some of that's been successful, I'm pleased to say. So this is what NITA is there to do, and the reason I'm telling you about it is all of... the materials that I'm going to show you are available on the website. So if you're looking for a place to start, if you're going to start doing some of this stuff, the material is there for you to use. So the intention of NITA was to bring together the efforts in standardisation in Australia, and also to provide some of the missing pieces of that infrastructure. And I'll talk a bit about what that is. But also getting, we're a federation, and you would understand well about states having different laws to your Commonwealth, as we do. And so getting all the ducks in a line is a big job, and it's important to have an organisation like this one. It's set up in a very interesting way. It's actually a private company, and the shares are owned by the states and the Commonwealth of Australia. And the directors of the company are the heads of the health departments of each of those jurisdictions. So they've actually got some reason for the company to succeed, indeed, because they're covered by corporations law. And I guess one of the things, and you people are further advanced with your audit office than we have been, is actually measuring the benefits so that the business case can develop. but it's measured at a national level, and we hope in a rigorous way so that politicians can be persuaded. So the main pieces of work at the moment are about that benefits identification, and you'll see their aim is to find the greatest benefits for the least cost in the shortest time with the least risk. So it's prioritising. That doesn't come as any surprise to anybody, I suppose, but there are lots of people clamouring for change, and I think the thing that Ian's brought to it most is focus. So actually doing one thing at a time and pushing away the other things. And the first three projects that they've got funded from the Council of Australian Governments. So the way that the funding comes into it is there's a funding model which is used for all kinds of things that the states and the Commonwealth do together, and that same model is being used to fund these projects. And the first two of those are identifier projects, so that's a unique identifier for the individual and for healthcare providers. But the healthcare providers will also have accreditation associated with it. So the things that the healthcare providers are able to do will be catalogued. And that will... The information, I think, will grow in time and get used within the system more as time goes on. The third of the projects is terminologies, and that is to set up agreed national terminologies. And Australia has made as a policy that SNOMED CT should be used as the base terminology. And indeed, we've joined with the UK and the US to be foundation members of the International Standards Development Organisation, which must be only weeks away from actually happening. It seems to have been a long time for those involved. But becoming an International Standards Development Organisation will actually help promote the use, I think, of SNOMED, although I certainly accept that the benefits are going to be derived by latecomers. And thank you for all your hard work. The other project that is being looked at now, and the one that you're probably more interested in, is the shared EHR and how you actually move health information around in space. And this is the way the terminologies and data specifications fit to go into an exchange format so one computer can talk to another computer, which is what you're actually trying to do. Those data specifications, some of them have been published already, as indeed have some of the subsets in terminology, but they're very rudimentary. They're not... whilst they're voluminous, I don't think they've stood the test of time yet. But they are in ISO 11179 format, and as is our National Data Dictionary. So these are the projects. I'm not sure whether you can read the smaller writing there, but this is what Ian said Nita was up to. I think the commentators from the outside of Nita are saying that they're further behind than this, but they've certainly started on data group specifications, on terminology, and terminology about medicines and terminology about pathology and radiology are the first caps off the rank. And they've also looked at structured documents, and by that... And Bruce will be interested to know that they consider diagnostic testing as one entity. Indeed, the standards committee that I lead in Australia now calls itself diagnostics, and we do both radiology and pathology messaging. And the HL7 version 2 message is pretty much the same. The exchange formats, and the reason I bring up version 2 is because I think although those involved in NITA in the first instance believed that the brave new world of web services and services-oriented architecture was where we should be aiming, they've come to a recognition that it's going to take us a little while to get there. And so the focus for 2007 is actually getting some HL7 version 2 messages properly defined. The identifiers and the secure messaging fit into that. And of course, the problem that you've been talking about, at least on the first day of the conference, you were talking about having messages that don't require a lot of effort to make point-to-point messaging work. There are two solutions to that, and both of them are being pursued in Australia. So one of them is to have self-publishing rules, so that and that's the web services approach, where one web service says to the other, these are the things I'm expecting, give me these things, and the other one does. The other approach is to get better conformance, and that is to make sure that the message that comes across can be understood, both at the structural level and at the semantic level. And that's why you need all of that infrastructure in place, so that you actually know you're talking about this patient and you know that this word means sodium, or this number means sodium. So this is the methodology that NITA are proposing at the moment, and you'll see there's a word accreditation in there. So they're talking about establishing specifications that can be tested for conformance and the outcome accredited. Now, this is what the dream of the services-oriented architecture. I'll just leave you a little while to ponder that picture because there's lots in it. But again, we've got diagnostic services there together as a single group, and certainly being treated that way. That's what the grand plan is, but we're not going to achieve that for some time, I'm sure. In any event, let me tell you a bit about pathology in Australia, then I'll go on and tell you about what some of the projects are expand on some of those national activities that I've talked about. So in Australia, pathology is a mix of private and public and hospital and standalone. And there's been 10 years of consolidation in pathology and radiology. And now the top three private laboratory organisations provide 80% of the community pathology and a good deal of the hospital pathology. My apologies for the Australian there. but interestingly, two out of three of those organisations are also radiology organisations. And one of them may be known to you, and if it's not, it may well be soon, and that's a very successful one, Sonic Healthcare. Sonic have bought into Germany, and they're expanding in Europe now, and they've just started in the US. So you may have an Australian competitor in near time. Apart from a few small anatomical pathology laboratories, most of the laboratories do both clinical pathology and anatomical pathology, and they're done together. And they're done under the same billing arrangements, and some of the pathologists are still crossover. So they are general pathologists that do both. More than 90% of the pathology is paid directly or indirectly by government, and practices are prevented from subcontracting their work. So you can pass on esoteric tests, but the person that, or the laboratory that does the work is the one that bills, and there can't be a different arrangement to that. Some of these things we think actually make for a better environment for doing good work, in fact. And there are effective industry associations for, because of the second dot point, that is a negotiation with government, the industry associations are quite cohesive and forward thinking, they recognise the imperatives of government in maintaining sustainable healthcare funding, but they also argue strongly for the appropriate rewarding of testing. So the Australian Association of Pathology Practices, which is what AAPP stands for, has for more than 10 years been very influential in establishing the fees, not just the total fees, but making the fees properly reflect the work component, so that you can't choose to do just the well-rewarded tests, for example. So there's pretty much even profit across all of the testing. ADIA is the Australian Diagnostic Imaging Association, and what's happened in Australia is radiology are following pathology in their... They entered into an agreement with government, so the AAPP and the College of Pathologists have now had three memoranda of understanding with government on what the fee should be principally, but it's actually about how pathology should operate in Australia. And the government and those bodies meet together with the National Coalition of Pathology, which are the public pathology practices. And they have a council, and they talk about the more important things at a national level. So pathology's been following, and that, just picking up on Bruce's consolidation and convergence point, there's definitely crossover. There's crossover personnel, and each watches the other carefully, and I see it all coming together, just as Bruce does. So more than 80% of our primary care physicians use desktop software routinely, almost all of them are connected. Most pathology reports are sent electronically, and most community doctors order pathology with their practice systems, although only a few of those are done with messaging. So they actually print out on a piece of paper very often. Now, I once had a go at, you're not meant to read this, you're just supposed to go, oh my God, look at that. That's a kind of organisational chart of how standardisation is done in pathology informatics. And there are lots of players, amongst them the Medical Software Industry Association and the College and lots of other organisations. In fact, this is an old picture, and it hasn't changed much in the number of boxes, it's just the boxes have changed their names. So, NITA, we've already talked about. I'm going to now talk, I'll focus in on pathology, I guess, and standardisation in Australia. So, NITA are looking at identifiers, which are obviously very important for pathologists. That's one of our biggest problems, making sure that the request is for a patient that we know, so that you link back to their history, and also when you send it on to, especially copies. It's not so bad when you send it back to the requester, linking up with their system. But when you send it to another specialist physician, for example, you make sure that you're not mixing patients up. Terminology. I've told you a bit about SNOMED now, but pathology is one area where subsetting is being done at the moment, and we're currently working on a first draft of that, and I've actually been asked to look at that, and I'm not sure that it's at all good, so I'm not suggesting that you use that as a tool yet, but it's going to get good and it should be there for people to look at. We use Loinc, so the standard for reported entities at the moment is Loinc, and in the paper that I wrote that I guess encouraged government to adopt SNOMED, I actually suggested that we continue to use Loinc for that purpose because it's pre-coordinated, and SNOMED was never intended to do this job. So it's interesting to see just how that'll pan out. Others have decided that we should use SNOMED for those entities, and until Loinc and SNOMED come together in a proper manner, it's going to be hard to do in the systems that are there. So we'll find out perhaps before you how that works or doesn't work, as the case may be. The data definitions also are in a form now. They've been working on them for 3 years. This is an ISO 11179 description of what a pathology report and request looks like. So each of the data elements described and related to one another. So it's exactly the model that Yor was talking about earlier. The AAPP, of which I was once vice president, have worked with NITA to actually, I guess, make sure that they understand the business requirements. And together we've produced a document using a new systems of analysis, because we've got some bright IT people from NITA. We're actually exploring new ways of doing some of this stuff, so we didn't use UML for this. In any event, the business requirements for Australian pathology are written, and we feel reasonably assured that that NITA understand what we need, so they're not going to go down a wrong path in making things. So that's not yet available, but it will be soon. And many of the requirements are exactly the same as I'm sure you would have. So there may be some value in you having a look at that document in due course. Standards Australia is the Australian member of ISO, like your ANSI. But Standards Australia, unlike ANSI, which is a conglomeration of standards development bodies, Standards Australia is actually a standards developer. And that's where a lot of the Australian standards have been developed. And they've done things like implementation guides, and I'll explain how these things work. And they look at security and they look at identification. Always first looking internationally. And internationally, both to ISO but also to HL7. And from the outset, certainly, of that diagnostics messaging group, we've actually favoured the HL7 approach to things. So rather than the work that was going on at ISO at the time. HL7 Australia exists, and it's an affiliate to HL7.org. We've had special activity with the services-oriented architectures, what was a special interest group and I think is now a technical committee, which is working on actually defining services with OMG. So if people are interested in seeing how HL7 might look like in a services-oriented environment, there's actually some fantastic work that's being done at the moment. And Ken Rubin from EDS and Veterans Administration is actually leading that project. So I certainly encourage you to get... Most of that is public, so you can go and look at the work that they're doing. They've done some fantastic stuff. And NITA are especially interested in the activities there. So we're also... the work of IHE has also been important to us. And I think that's a fantastic way of actually defining all of the elements you need to have communication between systems, and there are lots of them. We haven't yet convinced NITA that IHE is the way to go. They want to do it themselves at the moment. But what we have done for the last 2 years, and coming up soon with the conference that you've heard about, is to have a demonstration of interoperability between systems doing various things. And we've actually defined profiles for that interoperability to make sure that people do it. We haven't got the same compliance and accreditation that IHE have. But hopefully we'll learn a great deal from IHE if we don't actually adopt it. The last cap in the rank that getting involved in standardisation and pathology, and a reason why at least pathology will be standardised, is because we have a thing called the National Pathology Accreditation Advisory Council, which is the group that produce the standards by which laboratories are accredited. You've got an equivalent, haven't you? Is it CLMI or something like that? Sorry, I don't know. At any rate, there is a standard that they are working on which is about information exchange, and unless you do it this way, you won't be accredited. If you're not accredited, you can't bill Medicare. You can't bill Medicare, you die. More or less. So there's a big stick with it. The AAPP that I mentioned earlier has a privacy policy. So there are Australian privacy principles, which are actually the same principles as the European privacy principles. And the AAPP has taken that and said, in pathology, we do those privacy principles in this way. And that document's available, should you want it. And I've told you about the business requirements work that we did with NIDA. The Australian Institute of Health and Welfare is our gatherer of statistical data for the country about both health and welfare. And they have data definitions in, and these are available to anybody that wants them, in a national data dictionary. And they've got a resource that includes the national data dictionary and a whole bundle of other things called Meteor. All of those things are ISO 11179. So if you're thinking of using that tool, there's a whole lot of work being done for you already. You may wish to modify it, but you might want to go and have a look at the work that's there. There's been a lot of effort going into, gone into those data elements that are there. And finally, the National Centre for Classification and Health's involved too, and they produce the ICD-10 Australian modification, which I know has been picked up around the world for a number of things because it extends the ICD classifications. So, the messaging standards, the thing that we've tried to do in defining a message that can actually plug and play is have further constraints at every level so that the optionality of HL7 that makes you seeing one HL7, you seeing one HL7, you actually remove that optionality, but you give reasons for it and you make it easy for people to get it right, which I think is most of the reason for variation is people just not understanding how to do it or not knowing how to find the thing that they want to do, so they find another way of doing it. So we have various standards, starting with the HL7 standard, and then we say how you do it in Australia, and then we say how you do it for a particular thing in Australia, and then we actually give a cookbook that a programmer can use, and he can actually then test his message at the Australian Healthcare Messaging Laboratory to know whether he's actually conforming with those levels of constraints. And I'll pick up on. So that's what it looks like for pathology in Australia. And PAGSIP was a government-sponsored demonstration project to actually test the standards. So the standard was taken and the cookbooks made, and then it was tested. But these standards, for them to be any good, need to save money, save time, and or improve health outcomes. So these are some of the things that are going on. These are the NIDA data definitions that I was talking to you about, the pathology subset. This is what the summary of the privacy principles look like. This is some more work that was done by the Australian Health Informatics Council. Was an advisory group to the minister, and it's just reforming after being sent away. But one of the more important pieces of work that they've done that you might find helpful is an evaluation of electronic decision support systems. So this was quite a detailed guideline for how you go about assessing whether your decision support really works. And Enrico Coira, who may be known to some of you, actually led this project, and he tested it internationally. So the documentation there, you might find of help. Another driver for standardisation in Australia are the various registries that are just starting to take feeds from the large laboratories. And you may say that's straightforward, but only in some areas has it been working, and it'll change the way that the registries work significantly. And that's happening for both cancer and communicable diseases, and New South Wales Health's just put a tender out with specifications for the message, which happens to be the same specifications that I've been talking about. So a laboratory won't have to make lots of messages. The one that they send to the registry will be the same one they send to their customer. Another project that that builds on all of that work is what we've called the lymphoma wizard, just to give it a name, but it's actually a way of capturing the clinical data that needs to go into a clinical registry for, and in this case, blood cancers, because that's the one that I was working with at the time. But this actually uses Glyph to describe the guideline, and then Jello to implement it, and then sends an HL7 message from the oncologist or hematologist that's seeing the patient to the laboratory as a request, but contains all of the clinical information that you'd need for a clinical registry. So the staging and the therapy is part of that message. So not only does the laboratory have some more information to give good advice, but you've also got the information that you might want to pass on to a clinical registry. So that's another use of and a driver for standardisation. The Australian Association of Pathology Practice is concerned about the wide variation in that more technical layer of communications, actually putting out a request for proposal at the moment for a provider, and so all of the private pathologists have agreed they'll use one way of sending messages. So it removes some of the variation. The Australian Healthcare Messaging Laboratory I mentioned, that's open to anybody that wants to use it, and there's free assessment of your message. You just send your message and you get a report back. They're an accredited testing laboratory, so they're NATA accredited, and they will certify messages, but that costs you some money, so that's available. I've mentioned the interoperability demonstration. You've heard Yul talk about the First World Congress in Pathology Informatics, and you're all invited to that, and if you have colleagues that you'd like to encourage to come along, there are actually some brochures at the back and some koalas if you want to take them home for the kids. We'd love to see you there. There is an extension to the taking of papers until the end of April. So late breaking news, we have room for, and we invite you to submit. It's going to be held near Steve Irwin's zoo. So you'll get to visit there. Well, there's music with that. There it is. So thank you very much for listening.